Welcome back into College Golf Talk. Brentley here with a very special guest, Steve Burkowski, on vacation as he refuels and recharges for two more college fall events on the Golf Channel. So subbing in or pinch hitting as co-host this week is one of my favorite people in college golf. He actually has his own radio show on SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, Beyond the Tips, every Wednesday night. And that's Florida State men's head golf coach and director of golf, Trey Jones. Trey, thanks for coming on College Golf Talk.
Really, it's an honor to be on with you. And I hope Burko's having a good time right now.
Yeah, hopefully he's not eating too much ice cream. He got into a little bit of trouble up there in Wisconsin during the Ryder Cup. But lots to discuss on this episode. We got J.R. Smith's college golf debut. We got some match play events going on in the SEC, the Big 12. And we'll ask you a little bit about your program and some of your former players, including Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, and all that. So, but first, we got to talk about how College Golf Talk is brought to you by Velocity Global. We're really excited to have them on board. Velocity Global seamlessly connects employers and talent, anyone, anywhere, anytime, anyhow. Its global work platform is built on cloud-based technology, compliance expertise, and unmatched scale in 185 countries in all 50 U.S. states. The world of work is forever changed. Talent can live anywhere, work for anyone, and get the job done. More than 1,000 businesses engage top talent in another state or another country without the need to set up a foreign entity or registration. And rely on Velocity Global to make it simple and compliant. Velocity Global accelerates the future of work. To learn more, visit velocityglobal.com/golf. So, Trey, now before we get into all that's happened in the college golf world the past few days, I want to talk a little bit about Ryder Cup. You had two former players, Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, not only on the U.S. team, but they played together in a match. That was the first time that had happened. I went back into the history books. The last time that happened was 1995. Wake Forest, another ACC school, Jay Haas, Curtis Strange, they did it. Kind of looking back now, it's been a few weeks, but what did that mean to the program to be able to have those guys not only represent your team, but do it together in the same match?
Well, it was amazing for the program, all of our donors, everyone that's involved with Florida State, but more importantly for them, you know, to see those guys, because Brooks was a senior here when Daniel came in, and truth be known, Brooks' dad and Brooks were one of the reasons we recruited Daniel. They're, hey, you know, same part of the world. Brooks is from Wellington. Daniel's from Miami area. So they're the ones kept telling me about him, and we went to watch him. And so it was always a big brother, little brother thing while they were here. And they've both obviously been ultra successful. But we were fortunate enough to have Daniel here in town for the Notre Dame game. And he had mentioned this was the day before the selection that about the process and what he thought would happen. But for some reason, I always felt like they were going to put them together. If you listen to Captain Stricker talk about it, he'd say, you know, and we even have some guys on the same college team. And he kept sending them out together. So it was great to see. And for the wonderful fans, my gosh, up there in Kohler, for them to be doing the war chant when those two came out was, unbelievable honor for all of us.
Yeah, that's something that will be forever in FSU golf social media lore, is that video from Whistling Straits. So these are two competitive guys. I mean, Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, two real alphas. What was it like, kind of their dynamic together? Do you have any stories from the competitiveness, maybe in a qualifier or something between the two of them?
Yeah, absolutely, because I think every freshman that comes into, extremely high-level freshman, which, you know, they both were, they're ultra-competitive, and they want to make their mark. They're not, you know, they don't want to ride in the back of the bus. They want to, they're used to leading it. That's why you just call them alpha guys. But in the reality of it, it is very tough for the freshman to come in and do that. So it took Daniel probably till March of his freshman year to get comfortable with college golf and everything he needed to do. And once he did that, he could have been our best player on our team. We played a regional in Norman, Oklahoma, and then we played the national championship at Riviera. And he was phenomenal. He finished 18th there. So But neither one of them, you know, even their age, he would look up to him. Brooks would, you know, look after him a little bit, but I don't think either one of them would admit to it, them not being the guy.
Now, speaking of Ryder Cup, it kind of brings me to something that both of us have talked about in the past, and that's bringing a Ryder Cup style rivalry match to college golf, where you have the Florida, Florida State, the Duke, North Carolina, the Oklahoma, Texas, maybe during the fall, kind of bring in some alumni. But talk a little bit more about that and kind of what we had talked about in the past and kind of your ideas to maybe bring some of that Ryder Cup excitement and energy to college golf.
Really, I think the Golf Channel is responsible for a lot of that because of the format that, we have for the national championship, and our ultimate goal is to prepare our players for that national championship. But more than anything, when you see the PGA Tour going to different formats, whether it's a WGC match play or the event that they have in New Orleans where you have a partner, we got to remember these guys have got to have fun. They got to continue to have fun. They got to enjoy themselves. And if you ever look out there and they look like they're working and they're in college, then we need to kind of reexamine what we're doing. And I think the match play aspect of it brings even more of a team aspect into an individual sport. And when you ask our players what's the greatest thing about college golf, they will tell you that it's the team aspect. What they miss, what does Brooks miss? It's traveling with the team, winning with the team. Not that it's bad to win $2 million and go get on your private airplane, but it is nice to be in an old smelly van with your teammates as well.
Now, let's kind of use Florida State as an example. I know that rivalry wasn't played last year because of COVID and all the schedule stuff, but normally every year a pretty hard-fought battle and, you know, back and forth, some really great games throughout the year. But kind of using that rivalry as an example, what would kind of the ideal one-day Ryder Cup event look like?
I've said it for a while. I really wish the NCAA would allow us, each team, to play some weekend matches during the fall that don't count toward our 24. And as long as you don't miss school and you're there and back, what a great opportunity for Georgia and Georgia Tech to play each other when at the other one's place and have the fans come out prior to that football game and get to see amazing golfers and then potentially have your professional golfers come out and do something as well. I think we're missing the boat. I really do. And you ask how I think that would work out the best. Exactly like the Ryder Cup. If you don't have to count it, then play a alternate shot. Play a four ball. Do something different that can really, really, really put some pressure on a player. We were fortunate enough, as you know, to play in the Barber-Nicholas Cup a couple weeks ago. And to have the men and the women playing together, we just had a meeting with them today. It puts a lot of pressure on them, you know, because they don't want to leave the other one in a bad spot. So it's a completely different thing that you can learn from your players and they can learn from each other. But the teamwork is phenomenal. So I would copy the Ryder Cup. I don't think there's any reason to change that. And I agree. As long as you don't miss any school, what's the harm in Florida and Florida State having an annual match on the other one's golf course at 8 o'clock in the morning? I think it's nothing but positives that could come out of that.
Yeah, especially during the sleepy fall season where a lot of these, you know, top tour guys are not playing. If you could get Brooks Koepka and Billy Horschel to show up the Friday at Mark Bostic or at Seminole Legacy and play an alternate shot with maybe Brooks Koepka and Brett Roberts first, Ricky Castillo and Billy Horschel, that'd be awesome. You could sell tickets. You could promote the game. Everyone's already in town. I think you're onto something, Trey. But real quick about the Barbara Nicholas Cup. I mean, at a great course in Muirfield Village. But how many milkshakes did the team consume?
Well, they were very intelligent about that because when you have a women's field of and a men's field of four teams, They did not bring the milkshake machine out until the last day. That was our parting gift and one of the best probably player gifts that we had all year long. So it was I think it was an event where they didn't want to get that train rolling too early.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of match play events, we're going to move into kind of the news aspect of this podcast, the tournament recaps. First off, we had the SEC match play this week. At Shoal Creek, a new event, pretty exciting. Arkansas rolling a lot of momentum from the blessings the week before. They get it done again. They beat Vanderbilt in the final match. Ton of transfers on this Arkansas team. Brad McMakin has really attracted a lot of these different guys from Segundo Pinto from UNC Wilmington and Luke Long, who had another strong week after winning at the blessings. Trey, you've kind of dipped into this transfer pool a little bit over the last 2 years. Can you just speak to how that's kind of transformed this game? I mean, it seems like more and more guys are transferring and more guys are actually having success, whether you look at an RJ Mankey at Washington or last year when you had Vincent Norman come in and contribute. So just talk a little bit about how that's transformed what you guys do as a coach.
I think there's a few different layers to that, and it has changed college golf and will continue to do that. You know, you had the COVID aspect of it where people got an extra year that weren't planning on having another year to play college golf. So they said, okay, if I get an extra year, I've graduated or I'm close to graduating. Can I go somewhere different? Or that's where you've seen some Division II players make a transition or somewhere else. But, and then you have the grad students, the ones that are graduating early, and they want to go to grad school somewhere else. And every once in a while, the school that they're at, Brentley, just doesn't have the major that they're looking for, or one that they would, you know, would want to go to. And then the competitive aspect of it. You know, you look at an Arkansas and Coach Brad McMakin, some of the players that might not be interested in Arkansas out of prep golf, out of high school, when they get into college golf, they understand how good they are. They understand the culture that Brad has and that this is truly a top 10 program every single year. So in short, they're probably a more educated recruit at that point in time. And they understand that they're going to be on a great golf team, obviously playing great golf courses. I mean, I think, what have they played this year? They played the Carmel Cup. They played at the Blessings, and they just got through playing at Shoal Creek. So that, and now they're going to play next week at the Stevens Cup, where we're going to be at in Elotion. So I think it's a pretty good place to be. And, I believe the transfers probably realize that a little bit more than the 16-year-olds do.
Now, you also coached at a smaller school. You were at Georgia State before you came to Florida State almost two decades ago now. But is there kind of a double-edged sword where you could potentially have a Chris Goddard from Rutgers leave for bigger and better things?
It really is. And that's, you know, that's the thing that with Division II golf, is that going to end up becoming, with their rules and everything, is that going to end up becoming a JUCO situation, and where people even go into the school telling the coach, hey, I'm going to come here, but I'm going to come here for 2 years. And then I'm going to get in the portal, then I'm going to go somewhere else or do a go at it that way. Because, you know, ultimately you follow recruiting way more than I do, and I'm in the middle of it.
I don't know about that.
but we're only bringing in 1 to 3 guys a year, okay? And then you're going to have somebody that misses or don't miss. And there's going to be some people that have always wanted to go to Arkansas, and I think Arkansas has that right now. Obviously, John Davis second, but I believe Luke Long's from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Also played for 4 different teams, too. This is his 4th college.
Well, I think he's figured it out at this point. But he's where he wants to be. I have a guy in Connor Futrell right now. Connor Futrell came from Troy University. He's from Tallahassee. He went to Childs High School. You know, every Saturday he was pulling for Florida State, and now he gets to put on the jersey. So a little bit of that goes as well. I think the other thing, too, is our rosters are massive right now. It's going to change a little bit as we get over the COVID and we start to get a better grasp of how many people are on our golf team.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to another big event. This event is actually still going on as we speak, so we apologize that we don't have the final result, but Texas and Texas Tech battling right now at Houston Oaks, Big 12 match play. As I said, that will wrap up today. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State going toe-to-toe in the third-place match. Moving on to the women's side, Illinois Women's Invitational, Georgia and Louisville, they both share the title. And speaking of transfers, Emily Price from Kent State, she was formerly at South Carolina. She wins the individual medal. In second place is LSU's Kendall Griffin, who just transferred to Louisville this offseason. So the theme of transfers, again, it's just a real, you know, hot topic in college golf, and it's really cool to see. And moving on to what I think was probably the most interesting story of the week, and I think, Trey, you're going to agree with me, but J.R. Smith playing college golf. He makes his debut on Monday at the Elon Phoenix Invitational up in North Carolina. Two-time NBA champion. I mean, Trey, have you ever seen anything like this? A guy who played 16 years in the NBA and now he's a college golf freshman.
I think it's amazing. I hope we see more of it. I really do, because how cool of that is for his teammate. And there's so much that anyone who's at the top 1% of their profession can share with other people. It doesn't have to be in the same sport, but when it happens to be, it's amazing. So I do hope we see some other guys go back and say, no, I want to go back to college. I'm going to finish my degree. I didn't get to get my degree. I'm going to do that. And what better way than to play college golf and the experiences that you could know that. So hopefully we see that a little bit more. But hey, let's all skip over the fact really quick that that Illinois women's golf tournament was at Medina. So I looked at that on there and I said, oh, good. Hey, they didn't get one upped by Mike Small and going to Olympia Fields. They just went ahead and had their golf tournament at Medina. But to flip back around on you there, I play golf from time to time with Tom Glavin, and I'm fortunate enough to a huge Braves fan and to be friends with Tom and play with him. And they'll tell you, I mean, it's different when they play in that Tahoe deal and they go out and play. It's a different type of pressure for them. It's real. It's no different than us. So to watch them try to handle that is really interesting.
I think we need to, me being a huge Braves fan right now, and shout out to the Braves for getting through the National League Championship Series. But I think you got to set me up with a round or something at Seminole Legacy with Glavin. I mean, that sounds like the next order of business there.
Hey, let me tell you, he is an unbelievable guy. He's exactly who you think he is. The pre-shot routine is the exact same. I almost died for someone played with him, because I watched every game, and when he would get on the back of the mound and shrug his shoulders and then walk up to the rubber, it's the same thing he does walking into the golf ball to the tee, and he's left-handed and has a lot of speed. But like I said, he's an awesome guy, and plays golf down at Camp Creek and Shark's Tooth at the Water Sound Club. So we'll get you down there, and then we'll make it happen.
Perfect. Now I want to read you this quote from JR. From Tuesday, he says, quote, I got a lot of great feedback. Chris Paul was telling me guys were talking about it in the locker room. Guys are really looking for my scores, so I got to take care of business. So when I see them, it ain't going to be too much backlash. Now he shoots 83, 78, 79. He finishes 81st out of 84 players. But what's your kind of take of what he's talking about, how Chris Paul is watching him and just how committed he seems to be to getting better? Because I can almost bet that he's not going to shoot those scores again. I think you're going to see a huge improvement from that first to second event.
Well, once again, I mean, what do we ask all of our players every time? How good are you at self-assessing? And that's the main thing after a golf tournament is, can you self-assess your, and what do you do from that? Well, he's obviously at a high level. He knows how to self-assess. He said, I'm looking for feedback, in the quote you just said. And that's the feedback that he's going to get. What can he get more comfortable with? What can he get better with? You're exactly right. He will continue to get better without a question. And 83, 78, 79, even though he might have finished 81st out of 84, for the people at home that think it's easy, or I get donors every once in a while, they go, oh, my gosh, you know, your player shot 75, 76, 77. I can beat him. I played that course. I can beat him. It's not apples to apples. When you're putting out three-footers and they're downhill left to right and you're playing for a golf team, there's a whole lot more to it than it is just to go out there on a Tuesday afternoon.
Could a scratch player play Division I college golf? Because I've seen this. There's a debate on Twitter right now between unnamed golf media types that – who may be a scratch player, maybe a plus two. Could that guy play college golf division?
Absolutely. I think they could play Division I. I just don't know where they would play in Division I.
Probably not for Florida State.
But I do think if there's – but I think the other thing with our handicap system, if the scratch golf came off of tournament competition, then I think they would – probably have a chance. But if it came off playing at their home golf course, then who knows at that point in time? Because I've seen a lot of plus ones and plus twos that truthfully couldn't play college golf.
Now we have to talk about J.R. Smith's run-in with the Beehive. His push cart rolls over a yellow jacket nest in the ground in the final round. Actually, pretty serious, because I've heard some really terrible stories involving bee stings. So when I initially saw that and saw the video, I was very concerned. Luckily, it turned out that everything was fine. He finished the round. He seemed to be doing well. But that could be a pretty scary situation. Have you ever had anything like that as a coach happen to one of your players? Whether it doesn't have to be a bee sting, but something that was almost like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe this has happened.
I've had a player go for his head cover in the first fairway at the ACC tournament and get a bee sting. The one that really sticks out in my mind is, have you ever been to the Bulls Bay tournament over in Charleston, the Houdini Bulls play?
I haven't, but it's in Charleston, right?
That's in Charleston, yeah. And they have a large longhorn bull that's named Titleist, and it's tied to the tree in the 18th hole. And they have this massive, Swire's built this massive buildup to the clubhouse. So you're up on this hill, all man-made, looking down at the whole golf course. And this commotion is going on. And the bull has sat on a hornet's nest. And as it sat on it, obviously it got affected pretty bad. It had a chain around its neck and snapped the chain. Didn't break the tree, snapped the chain in two. It was so eager to get out of there. So we had a mad bull with hornets chasing it, running down the fairways. And obviously Florida State wears garnet. So it was not a good thing. And we had NC State as well. It was the two teams. And you should have seen the players scrambling on this golf course, because literally there was a bull loose running around, not jogging, not looking around. And it took them about four holes to grab the golf carts, go out, and gently bring Titleist back to its rightful place. But as far as hornets go, that's the only one. That's the one that jumps out of my mind.
You should have had Brooks go out there and tackle it.
So Matt Savage was on our team, and he kind of chased him up on a pond where there's a cross tie, and there were two gators in the pond and a bull on one side. So he was about to have to make a hard decision.
that's a great story. I'm almost speechless, Trey. But
hey, I want to ask this. So one thing that I have been taught in the media and when I do my radio show is never be afraid to say something controversial. You know, people listening, they want to hear some things. What in the world is J.R. Smith doing with a push cart? I mean, that's my thing. I mean, come on, of all the people, throw the thing on your back, dude. And towed it around. Come in, and he probably got a bad back or something that they won't let him. But anyway, I'm going to pick on him a little bit there. Once he gets into college golf world, he's fair game, right?
Yeah, I mean, I will say the push cart nation was really growing kind of middle of this decade. I think Stanford really got the ball rolling. They came out with that study, I think, where it actually helped your back to push the cart instead of carrying your bag. So yeah, but I will say I've seen it kind of maybe get a little less prevalent over the last couple of years. I don't know if you've noticed that, but again, I mean, J.R. Smith, I mean, he's got his hands full. It's his first college golf event. I got no issues with the push cart, J.R., but
I think you and I can pull it off easier than him. So I'm going to give him, you know, a little bit of a brag first, but that surprised me when you said that would be a funny sight to see him with the push cart. So
I almost needed a push cart playing your guy's course.
I'm not opposed to having one. I'm 54. I mean, I can rock a push cart any day of the week, but. Man, that did surprise me a little bit with him. But good for him, though, for getting out there. And that's another thing that I try to bring up. You know, when you see these professional athletes get out and play, Steph Curry, do some things, whether it's Tony Romo, and they don't play as well as people think they should, you still have to admire them for putting themselves out there and putting that name on the leaderboard and not sitting back and saying, oh, I could do this, I could do that. That takes a pretty strong person, because they're kind of setting themselves up for failure to go out in an arena that they're not comfortable with a lot of people watching and judging.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, yeah, Steph Curry going out and playing those Korn Ferry Tour events and almost making the cut. Now, I almost don't put Romo quite into that category anymore, because I don't think he's finished. I mean, you're talking about saying something controversial. I don't think he's finished a tournament in a while. So hopefully he can get back to finishing tournaments. But anyways, moving on to another segment of the pod that we visit every week. That's the PGA Tour University rankings, Velocity Global rankings. Those just came out today. A lot of movement. Trey, your player, John Pack, a year ago was a number one the entire year. No one caught him. He ended up earning his Korn Ferry Tour status. However, we already have a change at number one this year. This week, Sam Bennett, Texas A&M, bumps Pearson Cootie from Texas out. Some other movement on the, or inside the top 15. RJ Mankey, we talked about him earlier. Washington senior or grad student, Pepperdine transfers, got two wins, three other top threes this season. He moves up four spots into the top 10, 2-8. Jacob Bridgman from Clemson drops three spots. So that's kind of some of the movement. But just real quick about PGA Tour U, Trey, you were kind of in the early discussions for this. And so just kind of talk about, now that you've seen this program and having a player who was really in the thick of things the entire year, what are your thoughts about it? What does it bring in terms of, you know, benefits or positivity to the game of college golf?
It's an absolute game changer. And just my hats off for the PGA Tour for doing this. Before, our players had nowhere to go. When they got finished playing college golf, it was up to the agents. It was up to their resume to give them starts and to get a chance. And now there is a direct avenue for them, and they can see the live scoring. And Brendan Van Doren headed this up from the PGA Tour and just did an amazing job. I remember sitting in there in the committee a few years ago. We didn't know what they were going to present to us, but they sure did. And they came back with that. And I'll tell you, from John Pack's benefit, to be able to play in those events right after you get finished is a huge thing. But the main thing is, right now, the top five guys are exempt into the Korn Ferry Finals. So they're not going through second stage this week and next week. That is the biggest benefit for them. The other benefit is, with their manufacturers and with their agents, it lets them make a different decision, because they control their destiny a little bit more right now. And PGA Tour U is keeping people in college. You know, if you're a junior and you have a decision to make and you think you can get this, well, that's going to be a better deal than you're going to get on your own. So I think you're going to see, which I know you like, Brentley, I think you're going to see the best players stay in college golf. And it's going to even recruit some players to come to college golf, probably, that might not.
Yeah, my biggest ask now moving forward is that they do something like this for the women's game, because as we're going to probably see this year, too many of the top women's college golfers are turning pro after their freshman or sophomore season. So that's something that I'd like to see. Now, kind of projecting ahead to next week, some big tournaments going on. The annual event at Isleworth, which was canceled last year, that's always one that I like to get out to, being right down the street. So that's going to be Sunday through Tuesday. Stanford women are going to be hosting their event at Stanford Golf Club next week. The Ruth Chris Tar Heel Invitational on the women's side. So between those two events, probably 95% of the best teams in women's college golf are going to be between those two events. But the one event that I want to touch on, Trey, and we kind of touched on it earlier, is the Jackson T. Stevens Cup. A new event going to be on Golf Channel Monday through Wednesday. The tournament actually named in honor of a former chairman of Augusta National Golf Club, Jackson T. Stevens. He was also the co-founder of Stevens Inc., which is Little Rock based. But it's at a very cool venue, Aloshin Club in Roland, Arkansas. just as pure as it gets. Next year, it's going to Seminole, the year after Trinity Forest. So real quick on the format, and then I'll get your thoughts, but six men's teams, six women's teams, Arkansas, Florida State, Notre Dame, Arizona, Bama, and San Diego State on the men's side, Ole Miss, LSU, Arkansas, Baylor, South Carolina, and Virginia on the women's side. That women's field is really, really stacked. And then there's also some individuals from HBCUs, service academies. So just a great field, great event. That's going to be each day 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. I actually believe the first day it may be 4 to 7 p.m., but 27 holes of stroke play the first 2 days, and then the last day match play. So Trey, I know that was a lot, but you obviously, you know what the format is, or I would hope so. But just talk about how excited you guys are to go from one match play event to now even get more experience at this Jackson T. Stevens Cup.
Well, the first we heard about this, Mark Oskarson called me, and Martin Brazel are running the golf tournament for the Stevens family. And what a cool concept to be able to take your players to the Aleutian Club and to play on this, and then obviously be on the Golf Channel. I mean, every time you guys have an event that I'm not in or our team's not in, or Florida State, I get asked, hey, what do we got to do to get in that, or why aren't we playing in that? So you guys have been just a massive influence on a lot of these events. And once again, but the people who are doing this stuff, you know, once again, whether it's the tournament at Merideau or it could be at the Blessings or the Jack Stevens Cup at Aleutian, they're putting out a lot of money, and they're going and doing a lot of work to get the sponsorship for these things. And hats off to them. So they're taking college golf to another level, and you guys are just providing the vehicle for it, but the interest in it as well. I don't think there's a lot of people that know college golf as well as you do, and on Burko, and then of course Lance Ring, we're on the Golf Week side. So, hats off to the people who are going and raising all this money, donating the money. We're starting to get some charities involved to be able to give these opportunities for these players.
Yeah, it's amazing how the sport has evolved, and you know, kind of jumping in the time machine. You know, well, we're going to wrap things up here pretty shortly, but going back to the mid-2000s, you get the job at Florida State. I'm kind of envious of this, but you had the privilege of working alongside the late, great Bobby Bowden, the great football coach who retired in 2008, sadly passed away this past August. We've heard tons of stories about Coach Bowden and obviously everything that he did on the field, but also some of the things that he did off of it. Do you have one story that kind of sticks out that really speaks to the man he was? Because even though all of my family, just putting this out there, big Florida Gator fans, I still always had respect for Coach Bowden.
You had to love those times where you had Coach Bowden and Coach Spurrier, and both of them were so smart, so witty. And when they get the mic in front of their hands, and Coach Bowden would always call him Stevie, and Stevie just likes to I really like Stevie, but he just likes to needle things. He just likes to stir it up. And then obviously Coach Spurrier would always call Florida State FSU. He would never refer to us as Florida State. So they would still do that if they had the opportunities. But, you know, as far as a person goes, I mean, it's he always had time for you, and he had a gift that I've tried to learn, but I think it's more of a gift than anything else, is he would have the ability that whoever came to see him, and didn't matter if it was myself who knew him or someone else, that by the time they left him, he would make them feel like they did him a favor by coming by to talk to him. So if you were playing a legacy club and you would come out and I said, hey, Coach Bowden, I want you to meet a good friend of mine, Brantley Romine. By the time y'all got talking, he'd have found three mutual friends and you'd have left there and he'd said, I really want to thank you for coming over and saying hello. And that's a gift. It really is. But my story is this one. So we have a practice area. We have a tee on one end, a tee on the other. And because he would always stop and talk to people, he couldn't get from one end down to the other without talking to a lot of people because he just would do that. So I had a gate put in for him so he could walk through. It's a walk gate. And then they also, at the same time, were putting a construction gate. And so I showed him how to use it. Coach, you can park your car down here. I had a den caddy with his name on it. Obviously, I still had that. And we just put that one den caddy in the corner of the tee box every single day, hoping he'd show up. And then when he did, he would do it. He really liked to use it a lot to get acclimated, as he would say, to the heat. And then one year I saw that he had figured out how to open up the gate, the drive-in gate. And he pulled his car in there 5 yards, you know, graciously just kind of pulled it in there. And then I looked again, you know, a few days later, a week later, and the car is a little closer to the tee. And it was a bigger car. And I get a call probably a week after, 2 weeks later, the general manager of the club says, hey, I need you to do me a favor. He says, Coach Bowden's got his car on the tee box. I'm going to need you to go talk to him. And it was a Mercedes S500. And he had parked it on the tee box. I mean, when I tell you he parked it on the middle of the tee box, and he had literally just opened the door and he was hitting golf balls, starting right there. And I mentioned to the general manager, I said, listen, I said, there's a lot of things I'm going to ask him to do. I said, I'll ask him if I can wash the car. I'll ask him if he needs whatever he wants to do. I'll ask him if he wants to drive it to the first hole, but I'm not going to ask him to move that car. I promise you that. And I remember telling him that after he kind of quit golf later on, and he laughed about it. But just always have time for you, you know, the greatest person. And that's my biggest fear, though, was because he would always want to use that to acclimate. It'd be 105 degrees, and he'd be down there in old school. He'd be sweating so hard. I was like, you know, please don't have a heat stroke on my driving range, Coach, whatever you do.
No. Well, Trey, that was the perfect way to, you know, close the pod, talking about the great Bobby Bowden. You know, I'm sure you, like us all, miss him every day. And, you know, he really did a lot of great things for not only Florida State, but college athletics in general. And but want to thank you for coming on College Golf Talk, and not just coming on as a guest. You really stepped up to the plate. Filled in for Burko while he was probably eating ice cream somewhere on the beach. But hopefully Burko is pacing himself, and he'll be back at it next week. So for Trey Jones, I'm Brentley Romine, and that was College Golf Talk.